Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach. On today's episode, we have a special guest joining us to talk more about her journey with endometriosis. She is sharing everything from what it has been like to have endometriosis, what kinds of symptoms she's had, how her quality of life has been affected. Even we talk about her sex life. She shares some tips on how to support others who have endometriosis as well. This is our second episode on our series about endometriosis. Before we get started, I wanted to make sure that if you missed last week's super awesome masterclass, it's not too late to catch the encore. Empowered in the Bedroom, Debunking the Myths is this Saturday, March 13th at 1 p.m. Pacific Time or 4 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you missed the first one, don't worry, I got you. We got the encore. Be sure to go to masterclass.jordandonnell.com to sign up today. As a reminder, my sexy box goes out March 15th. If you have not signed up for my quarterly subscription box, you're going to want to do so now. Each box is valued at over $100 in product, and let me tell you, usually they're worth a lot more. They're super fun. They're a great way to learn more about your pleasure and your body. Highly recommend getting your sexy box. Be sure you do so right away before they sell out. Joining me today is Laura from Endo Monologues. The Endo Monologues is a diary of a woman and her uterus, Patricia. She shares her journey of what it's like on social media and in her blog, all about endometriosis, adenomyosis, vaginismus, and vulvodynia. She is a wonderful person to follow on social media, and that's how I came across her, looking for support for women's health topics. And I fell in love with her and what she was sharing. So welcome, Laura. You want to go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Laura. I was diagnosed with endometriosis in 2016. I've kind of had a long history of menstrual issues. It's kind of something that's just was expected to be normal in my family. I'm 29. Period started when I was 11, so kind of been suffering with issues now for nearly two decades. And yeah, it's been a kind of long, twisty road, if I'm honest, and kind of dealing with that both physically and mentally. So, as I said, yeah, I started my periods when I was 11, and I kind of expected that would be when, because all the women on my mum's side of the family, that's how it's been with their periods. They've always started them quite young, and I was always told that they would probably be quite heavy, and that unfortunately is just something that I've got to kind of deal with. But it got to a point when I was about 14 that my periods were kind of lasting for weeks at a time, and I was becoming anemic and missing time off school, and my mum kind of just said, do you know what, enough is enough and we need to get this checked out. So I went to the doctors. I had a complete meltdown about going to the doctors because my dad booked the appointment, and he booked it with a male doctor, which I was not happy about, and his answer was simply to just put me on the contraceptive pill, and that would regulate my periods, and then hopefully things would then settle, which for the most part did work. I definitely found that my periods were shorter, but I still, when I had them, they were horrendously heavy. Like, I was soaking through a super tampon and a jumbo pad within an hour. So it was kind of even more intense, I suppose, and I was still like bedridden by it. But then in 2016, I was diagnosed with an underactive thyroid hypothyroidism, and they kind of said that that was probably what the link was between my periods. And I kind of went, oh, okay, if that's what it is, that's what it is. And then I kind of just got on with it, really. I tried my best to kind of make sure that I was in school, even though I was in pain, and just my mum is very much of the approach that we just get on with it. Like, it sucks, but unless, like, we're dying on death's door, we kind of just go on about our day, and that's what it was like. But then in my early 20s, so when I was in university, kind of more pain started to develop. So in my teens, it was mostly the heavy bleeding and the severe kind of menstrual cramping. But then when I was at university in my early 20s, it became more pelvic pain, back pain, and it actually became really incredibly painful to have sex. So I kind of went back to the doctors, and their kind of response every time was that, oh, we'll just change your pill. It's your pill that you're on. Your body's adjusted to it. We'll just change the variant of it. And it would help for a little bit, but then it just got to a point where I was bedbound once a month and losing so much blood that I decided that I have to go to the doctors about this. So in 2015, I went to see my doctor, and the first thing he said was, oh, well, women who are promiscuous often have reproductive issues. And I hadn't told him about my sex life. I wasn't promiscuous, and even if I was, that would have been none of his business. But that was the first thing he jumped to and said, we need to do a full sexual health panel. And I said, well, I did one of those a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't been with a new partner. Like, since then, I've always been quite careful about it. And he said, well, we'll do it just in case. And that's probably, like, the reason behind it. And I kind of, I don't know if it's a British thing, but we're kind of ingrained to trust what our doctor tells us. And I kind of said, oh, well, if he thinks it's linked to my thyroid, as he said, then I'll go along with that. So went and saw a lovely nurse, did the full sexual health panel, pregnancy test, and she kind of said, I don't really understand why we're doing this. And I said, neither do I, but I'm going to jump through his hoops. And then I had a phone call probably a week later from a different doctor, a different male doctor, who said, oh, everything's come back fine, but you've got thrush. And I said, okay, but thrush isn't going to be the cause of my pelvic pain and my sexual pain. And he was like, oh, is that why you've had these tests done? I went, yes, I've got severe pelvic pain. I've seriously heavy periods. And he said, right, we'll book you in for an ultrasound. And that happened November of the same year. And then Christmas Eve 2015, the first doctor, the one who said that I was promiscuous, he rang me up. He left me a voicemail. I know. And he said, everything's fine. No polyps, no cysts. Everything's fine. Again, it is what it is. And I kind of accepted that and just kind of went back to believing, well, maybe that's how it is for women in my family, because my mum has suffered with ovarian cysts. My aunt had horrendously heavy periods, and my grandmother did as well. So it was just like, well, this is what it's like. But then in March of 2016, I went to the doctors. I think it was for an ear infection. And I said, oh, no one really sat down and went through my results with me following my ultrasound. And she turned around, different doctor, and said, oh, you've got a thicker uterus than normal. And I said, oh, okay, is that what's going to be the cause of all of my problems? And she said, yeah, most likely. And I said, will it affect my fertility? And she said, no, it shouldn't. That's probably what is the issue. So I kind of had more of an answer than I had before. I was annoyed that that hadn't been explained to me. But again, kind of had a reason for it, so I just kind of accepted it. And then June of 2016, I went to the doctors again. I had to have a health check because I wanted a re-prescription of my contraceptive pill. And this lovely nurse said to me, are you on the pill because of your endometriosis? And I said, what? And she said, well, that's why you have the pill, right? And I said, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. I've never heard that word before in my life. What on earth are you talking about? And she went through my notes with me, where the doctor in December had written that they suspected I had endometriosis. But for 6 months, no one had thought to tell me that. And the only reason I found out was because this nurse brought it up in this consult. So I ended up asking to see a new doctor. I did take action against the doctor who had told me everything was fine. And I was rushed through to a gynecologist who, so that was literally the same month. In June, I got booked in for another ultrasound. And by this point, I couldn't have sex. It was so painful. And when I had the internal ultrasound, I actually passed out from the pain. And I was immediately booked for my first, it was initially a diagnostic laparoscopy, but my gynecologist said, if we find anything, we will excise it. And I was like, fine. So in August 2016, I was diagnosed with stage 4 endometriosis and adenomyosis. They found it on both of my ovaries. It was on my bowel. It was on my bladder. It was on my pouch of Douglas. And she said that I should have been referred to her years ago. So I had it all excised. It was all removed. I had the Mirena coil inserted at the same time. And then after that, for the last couple of years, it's been okay. I don't have periods with the Mirena. I know that the Mirena causes a lot of issue for a lot of individuals, but I personally get on with it really, really well. And then the endometriosis diagnosis, kind of in combination with the medical malpractice and incredibly painful pelvic exams, led to me being diagnosed with secondary vaginismus. And I was also diagnosed with vulvodynia. That was 2 years ago, which I'm managing. It's been quite a long road. And then last year, towards the end of the year, oh no, not last year, in 2019, my symptoms started to come back. I mean, they had always been in the background, like the kind of pelvic twinges, backache, occasional cramps. But by December 2019, they had ramped up again. I had started spotting. It was painful to have sex. So I went straight back to the doctors, demanded to see the same gynecologist. And then I had an MRI February of last year, where it showed that I had deep infiltrating endometriosis on my bowels again and my bladder. I was put on Zoladex injections as a prep for the laparoscopy that had been booked. Originally, I was supposed to have my surgery in May, but because of the coronavirus, that got postponed. So I stayed indefinitely on Zoladex injections, which again worked for me. I didn't have any issues with them. I was also put on HRT to kind of manage the side effects of the Zoladex. And then October of last year, I had my second laparoscopy. And once again, it was found on my bladder, on my bowels, on my ovaries, and my pouch of Douglas. So I had all of that excised. Some of it was ablated because it wasn't as serious. It was like superficial. I had my coil switched, and that's kind of gotten me to now. My pain has kind of reduced again, but it will never fully disappear. But yeah, that's kind of my very long-winded endometriosis journey.
I can't believe your doctor said that. That blows my mind. And I'm so glad you were able to get in with somebody who was able to help give you some options at least. And now for the people listening, we haven't yet talked about vaginismus and dyspareunia, pain with intercourse. We're getting to those. Eventually, I'll be talking about that a little bit more.
Oh, and I just forgot to mention that actually when I challenged the doctor who basically accused me of being promiscuous, when I kind of went through the complaints procedure, their argument was that he was talking to me the way that he would have spoken to his daughters. And I said, my dad would have never spoken to me like that. Like, that's not an excuse. That's
so inappropriate.
So inappropriate. And I, as far as I'm aware, he's not actually a practicing doctor anymore. So that's at least something that's kind of come out of it, but it shouldn't have. The situation should have never happened.
No, and that's so much judgment that he's placing on somebody. And as a medical provider, that's not your role to judge. Like, you have to take your personal opinion out.
No, and I'd given no indication. I hadn't even mentioned my sexual history, my sex life to him. He just came out and said it with no prompt, which was why I was so taken back. I mean, I think if that had happened to me now, I probably would have challenged it there and then. But because I was younger, I don't think I have the confidence to kind of challenge him in that moment.
Well, and I think too, at that time, you're feeling very vulnerable. Like you don't know what's going on. You're trying to get answers. You can't get any answers.
Yeah.
Now, so you had two surgeries. Is that correct? Two laparoscopies?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. And then the surgery, you had a surgery recently, didn't you?
Yes, that was the one that was in October of last year.
Currently, what kind of symptoms? Are you having any symptoms or is everything pretty well controlled?
They're definitely better than what they used to be. I generally tend to suffer with lower back pain, sciatica pain, which will radiate from my lower back down into my hips and my legs. I suffer with bloating a lot, the endo-belly kind of side of things. I will have uterine cramps and my ovaries will quite often have that kind of throbbing sensation. I still think my body is going through the motions of having a period, but I just don't have the period, if that makes sense. My body will kind of still respond in the way that it would. So once a month it does get painful, nothing compared to what it was. I can kind of function taking painkillers or using heat therapy, that sort of thing, but they're the kind of main pain symptoms that I have now.
So for the listeners to get a little bit of understanding, the Mirena is a progesterone-only IUD, intrauterine device. And for some women, not everybody, but for some women, it does make a huge difference because about 30% of people won't have periods. And then if you're not having periods, you're not having those fluctuations in hormones that kind of induce more endometriosis symptoms.
I don't have periods on it. I'm very lucky to be in that 30% who doesn't have a period on it. Yeah,
especially for using it for the way that you use it too. Like that's wonderful that it works well. How do you feel endometriosis has affected your life?
I find sometimes that it's quite limiting. I'm very lucky that I work in a profession with individuals who understand that I'm going to have good and bad days. It definitely has affected relationships, both romantically and in terms of friends. You'll have people who will believe you and try to understand what you're going through, and you'll have people who are just, I've had it where they don't believe me. They think that I'm kind of being a drama queen and being over the top. And if anything, for me, it's very much allowed me to realise who is there for me. I'm fortunate that hasn't really affected my career progression. In teaching, you kind of naturally follow a natural progression of gaining more responsibility. But at the same time, you can kind of say, do you know what? I'm not ready for that yet. Initially, I worked full time. I've now switched to part time. That was a decision that was made because of there wasn't enough work for me. But actually going part time is probably one of the best things I've ever done. It allows me to kind of focus on my physical and my mental health. In terms of relationships, I'm very fortunate that my other half, we met months after my first laparoscopy. So he's been there through the entirety, really, of my journey with endometriosis since official diagnosis. He's very understanding. He gets it. I'm at a point where I can be open and say, do you know what? I'm not having a good day today. And he can say, well, do you want me to leave you to it? And I can say yes or no. But it is difficult. It is difficult, especially when you're met with people who don't understand and don't want to understand. And actually, some people, it comes from a good place where you start to explain it and then they start to offer you unsolicited advice. I've had some really hurtful conversations where I've been compared to someone's family member's friend and they've got it. And I'm like, it's not the same for everyone. No chronic illness is the same for everyone. And I think as an individual, I've had to learn to protect myself and be in a place where I can challenge people and misconceptions and medical professionals say, actually, I don't agree with you, or what you're doing is not acceptable. And I think if I hadn't learnt to do that, I would be surrounded with people who would be negative for my mental health, and my mental health would, taken a turn because of that. But I'm very fortunate. I'm in a very fortunate situation where I work with people who are supportive. I've got family who are supportive. I've got friends who are supportive. But I know that for a lot of individuals with endometriosis, that isn't the case, and that's really quite upsetting.
Now, your family members with painful periods, have they been diagnosed with endometriosis as well?
So my mum has been, but the worst thing is my mum, when I was 18, my mum had a ovarian cyst. It was huge. It was like 55 centimetres long with a litre of fluid in. It was massive. She looked about 9 months pregnant. And of course, she had it removed. And when they removed it, luckily, they managed to save one of her ovaries because she didn't want to go straight into the menopause. They found that she had endometriosis then, but we didn't put two and two together because her surgeon literally said, "We've removed the cyst. Oh, and by the way, you've got endometriosis, but it's nothing to worry about." My mum kind of didn't at the time think anything of it. And it wasn't until I was told they suspect you've got endometriosis, my mum went, I've been told that I've got that. And she felt awful because we just hadn't made the connection. My aunt hasn't formally been diagnosed with endometriosis, but once we spoke to her and kind of compared symptoms, I'm fairly certain that she has it as well. And I wouldn't be surprised by what my mum and my aunt have said about my grandmother, that she would have had it as well. So I'm not sure if my female cousin has it. She might have escaped it. I hope she has. But definitely kind of in that family line, I'm pretty certain that if my mum had it, my aunt had it. And if my mum and aunt had it, then my grandmother had it.
Now, how many appointments do you think you had? Do you think you had more than 10 appointments prior to your diagnosis of endometriosis related to your heavy periods and your pain?
Oh, yeah. Well into the 20, if not 30 appointments. I was going every couple of months asking for help. So, yeah.
Yeah. I know in the U.S., I think the statistic is the average is at least 7 or 8 appointments before getting a diagnosis. It's just too bad that, and it's hard to diagnose. You know, the only official way to diagnose it is with a laparoscopy. However, we need to probably be suspecting it a little bit more and digging a little bit further into it so that people have the opportunity to have some answers and treatment options.
And that's right. And I think sometimes, I mean, I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome. And again, that's what I thought was the cause of the bloating. And then it wasn't until my gynecologist said, oh, actually, they tend to go hand in hand. And I think that endometriosis is quite often at the bottom of the list because the symptoms can be linked to so many other things. And it's not until potentially all of the causes or have been exhausted that endometriosis then gets mentioned. And I think that's what happened to me. They were trying to point the finger at other things, which I do suffer with, but I think the endometriosis connects all of that as well.
Absolutely. Now, this question might be a little too personal, and you can totally say you don't want to answer it, but do you have any history of sexual trauma?
No.
There is some research out there that shows, I want to say there's a high percentage of women with endometriosis that have had sexual trauma, and there's some correlation between the two. I have to find the article, but...
That's awful. No, I have no history of sexual abuse. But the fact that some individuals, there is a connection like that, but I find that really heartbreaking because it's one thing to have a chronic illness like endometriosis, but to be linked to sexual trauma is just... That's awful. That's absolutely awful.
Now, fertility. So you brought up that was one of the first questions you had asked your doctor, is this going to affect my fertility? Do you want to touch on that at all?
It's always something that plays in the back of my mind. I think it could be difficult for me, but then I'm kind of reassured by the fact that my mum, I think, literally came off the contraceptive pill for a week and got pregnant with me. So I think it could be difficult. I'm prepared for it to be difficult. And I think by making my peace with that, I've accepted it. my other half, we talk about it a lot. We talk about, you know, starting a family and all of those sorts of things. I think by having the marina, it will be more of a conscious decision when we want to start a family, because obviously I either have to then have it removed and potentially risk my endometriosis developing again, or kind of waiting and then having it switched over and all of those sorts of things. So I very much want to have a family. If I fell pregnant today, then I would be over the moon and that would be a wonderful thing. Right now, we're not in a position where we want to start a family, but I think in the next couple of years, that will be a discussion that we'll have. My partner is so supportive of that. I mean, I've been prepared for fertility issues since I was diagnosed with an underactive thyroid. So it's something that's kind of just, it's there. And I've said to him quite openly, I want children. That could be a difficult process for us. It might be that we have to have help in the form of IVF. And he's like, look, we'll do what we need to do and I'll support you in that so that we can have a family. So it's one of those things that I do think about. As I said, I'm prepared for it to be tricky. But if and when that is a decision that my other half and I make, we'll cross that bridge and we'll work through it together to make sure that hopefully we can have children.
So a couple of weeks after this episode airs, I actually got another interview with a friend of mine who had endometriosis, had her uterus and ovaries removed at a young age, and then went through fertility treatment with surrogacy and donation of eggs to have a family. And so I'm excited for her to share her story, but you might find interest in that too.
I think that's what's so great, is that there are so many different ways for individuals to have a family. Yeah, I think that's great for individuals who might have fertility issues, that, you know, just because one door's closed, there's so many other routes to get there. So, yeah, that's reassuring.
Exactly. So for other women who have endometriosis, do you have any advice for them?
I think it's really about trusting that you know your own body and being, you know, mindful of when potentially something is wrong. Like, don't ignore it. There's, you know, there could be like a really generic reason for it. But at the same time, I think, especially in the UK, is that we have to trust our doctors. And actually, I think there needs to be more discussion that doctors can be wrong, and that we are the best person to know about our health. And actually, if an individual goes to their GP or their doctor or their gynecologist, kind of gets disregarded, oh, it's all fine, you are entitled to a second opinion, a third opinion, a fourth opinion. And I think a lot of individuals are perhaps scared to potentially challenge their doctor, you know, and make that step to see someone else. I think it's really important that we do advocate for ourselves. And that can be tricky, of course. You know, challenging a medical professional can be really scary. But when it comes down to it, it's your health. You know, you have to look after yourself physically, mentally. And you're not going to be punished for going and seeing a different doctor. It's okay. If anything, it's probably the best thing to do, to get that second opinion and then put that together. I think that's really important for people to know and understand.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And advocating for yourself is huge. And I definitely try my best when patients come in and they're like, I know something is wrong. Like, you know your body best. You are in your body every day. And I try really hard to respect that. And I appreciate when patients advocate for themselves, because when you feel something is wrong, something is probably wrong.
And I think as well, going to the doctors for some people can be quite intimidating. I got to a point where I just wrote down, I keep a diary, everything that I found was going wrong. And even if I couldn't articulate that, I would just go, this is what's going on. And I think knowing that there are different ways to communicate with a doctor as well can be useful. You don't have to sit there and kind of justify yourself. You can just give them the evidence, so to speak, and they can deal with that. But yeah, advocating for yourself is so important, so important. That's the number one thing.
How can, like, your girlfriends support you with, or let me rephrase that question. So, like, if I have girlfriends with endometriosis, what is the best thing that I can do to support them?
Definitely taking the time to research endometriosis is a huge thing. My close friends went away and kind of said, well, could you give us some websites to look at? Could you, for us, so we can actually understand it, can you explain to us how it feels? My other half, bless him, when I told him I had endometriosis, he went and Googled it. And he joined the endometriosis community so that he could ask other people with endometriosis what it was like for me. So I think actually for me and my friends, my girlfriends, having someone who wants to understand is so important and actually the best thing. And having someone say to me, well, what is it? What does it involve? What's it like? Rather than someone kind of assuming or trying to compare it to another situation, because that's not how it is. So, yeah, I'm always so happy when someone says, oh, could you give me a website or a source that I can kind of go away and read? Is there someone I can talk to? Because for me, I'm like, well, you want to understand. Someone who wants to understand, that is for me the most important thing, definitely.
So what are some good resources for women who have endometriosis?
I tend to stick with kind of medical based. So in the UK, there's Endometriosis UK, which is like the biggest charity. Their website, it's a combination of kind of the scientific side of endometriosis as well as the support side. Like, they're brilliant. They have like a hotline you can ring and talk to someone, which is really, really useful. The NHS in the UK, their website isn't as in-depth. I actually quite often use Reddit. They've got an endometriosis forum, which is really useful. And again, there's lots of links to endometriosis resources on there. I tend to stay away from Facebook just because, especially in the last couple of months, there's kind of a toxic side to it, that if you have these groups and you'll join them, but if you don't fit their approach to dealing with endometriosis, you almost get shunned. So I tend to stay away from Facebook. So yeah, sticking to the kind of the scientific, the medical websites, Instagram as well. I find Instagram really, really useful, not even from terms of my own kind of account, but there are charities who have Instagram accounts. There are kind of medical societies who have endometriosis accounts. It's a wealth of knowledge. Connecting with people who are going through it as well is really, really useful. And I think sometimes having that kind of community is great. I mean, obviously, I know that some individuals do prefer the Facebook community. I love the Instagram community. I've got people who I can reach out to and ask questions, and they'll point me towards, you know, medical research or whatever. So that's kind of what I use and I think is the most useful, especially if, you know, you're starting your endometriosis journey or you're connected to someone who has it. That's what's most useful, I find.
Do you have a couple Instagram handles that you highly recommend?
Again, the Endometriosis UK one is brilliant. The Endometriosis Foundation is another good one. Endometrics, they are a Swedish-based company and they developed a tracking app for individuals with endometriosis. I know that Quendo, which I think is the Australian, New Zealand one, they're brilliant. There's so many. They're, I think, kind of the main ones linked to perhaps where you're located is a good place to start, because they'll be able to kind of set you up with resources in your country. But yeah, there's loads. But they're the ones I usually kind of connect with and go to.
Yeah, I find that Instagram, I agree with you that I love the Instagram community and being able to see people with similar stories, share their side and things like that, that helps a lot. Now, where can the listeners find you at?
On Instagram, my account is The Endo Monologues. I also now run a blog, which is the same name, it's theendomonologues.com. They're the two main places. Instagram is where I started. I will forever be loyal to my Instagram account because it's connected me with so many people. I also have a Twitter, but I don't use it as much. But again, that's Endo Monologues at Twitter. And I'm now also on Reddit with the same account name, The Endo Monologues.
Awesome. So I'll be sure to type all of those in the show notes so that people can easily find you. And that's actually, Instagram is how I found you as well. I've been following your journey for months now and was really excited when you agreed to podcast with me. So I really appreciate you talking with us today. Is there anything else you want to add?
Not that I can think of, but thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about intimate cases.
This podcast is sponsored by Pure Romance by Jordan Jones, offering top bath and beauty products and relationship enhancement items. By shopping with Pure Romance by Jordan Jones, you are supporting this podcast. Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again and see you next episode.